Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You
and you
and you
and you.
Duck and cover.
Duck and cover. Duck and cover. Now, under Obama, this has all been turned on its head. When I grew up in the 50s, we, in grade schools, were actually brainwashed by the government into protecting ourselves should there be a nuclear showdown between the Soviet Union and the United States. And as meek as it was, we were taught, we weren't given flowers and closure and candy and therapists. We were told that we might get in a nuclear war with Russia. And we were taught, run in a closet, get under a desk. Today, of course, the children are not taught anything could harm them except evil white males and things of that nature. Now, we have a president who, in my opinion, has made America much less safe in less than the year and a half that he's been president. In less than a year and a half, the man has wrecked America. We know about health care. I'm not going to dwell on it. We know it's socialized medicine. We know that most people don't even know what's in the bill. We know that Obama doesn't know what's in the bill. We know that Pelosi doesn't know what's in the bill. We know that we can't pay for it. We understand it's a floating disaster that will emerge as time goes on. But while you are getting angry over health care, this character, this college professor, this left-wing fanatic, this lunatic has gone ahead and he's going to sign a deal with Russia tomorrow, cutting our nuclear arsenal by a third. And the Russians said, great, 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 Yankee, you sign it and we'll sign it, but we have the right to opt out of it. Ladies and gentlemen, do you feel safer today knowing that you have a radical left-wing president who is dismantling our nuclear first strike capabilities? Now, nuclear weapons are terrifying, but by themselves, they're not really evil. Whether you know it or not, they actually prevented nuclear war for well over 60 years. And yet Obama is throwing away one of history's most successful deterrents of nuclear war, which is our overwhelming strength. I want to ask you a question. What if you're walking down the street in Florida where you're allowed to carry a gun and a guy comes up to you with a knife and you say to him, you have a gun, you better back off. And he knows you're in Florida. You think he would continue to attack you or he'll figure you might have the gun. Now, let's switch that around. You're walking down a street in San Francisco where you're not allowed to have a gun and an illegal alien comes at you with a knife and you say, stop, I have a gun. Do you think he'll stop? He knows you don't have a gun and he's more likely to attack you. And so I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, does Obama's idealism make us more safe or less safe? Now, be realistic when I say this to you. Be realistic. Don't just get up here and support Obama because that's what you want to do. If you're not able to hold an argument, you're not welcome in the Savage classroom. You could sit in the back with a dunce cap where you belong, but you're not going to get on the show and debate me unless you can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that less nuclear weapons make you safer. Particularly when Russia has said they have the right to opt out of the agreement that Obama's going to sign tomorrow. I personally believe that the world is mocking Obama's weakness and naivete. As I said, the Russians have said that they can opt out of Obama's new nuclear disarmament treaty anytime they want. The Hitler of Iran, Ahmadinejad, said to Obama he was an amateur and go get some experience. Secondly, I want to know where my government is. What the hell happened to my damn Congress? Where did this lunatic with big ears get the right to dismantle the nuclear arsenal and not a word out of Congress? I thought I lived in a democracy. I feel as though I'm screaming into the wind. Where the hell did Congress go? You're telling me this big-eared lunatic has the right to do anything he wants? King Ludwig Obama? Are you crazy? You want to live in a world like that? Are you people nuts? Where does he get the ability to do this? Where the hell have the damn Republicans gone, those worthless check pants lunatics? Those worthless check pants gangsters? Where are they when we need them? In 1940, I'm going to bring you back in time. 1940, can you remember this? You know anything about this? You know about a man named Chamberlain? You ever hear of him? Well, by tomorrow, you'll be hearing about it on Fox News when Blackboard gets a hold of it. I talked about Chamberlain 2 years ago. I try to tell you that Obama is probably worse than Chamberlain. So here's lesson number two. Shall I give you the lesson of what's coming? I'll give you the lesson when I'm in the mood. All I know is that we have a lunatic for a president who is trying one experiment after another. Every talking point of the pot-smoking college dorm lunatic. Every agenda item of the pot-smoking up at night, late lunatic in college dorms, every one of his policies is a reflection of that agenda. It's as though we have a stone college teacher who has taken over the country. And there's no Congress to check him. Where's the check and balances? Let's have a vigorous debate in America. I want to hear it in Congress. I want to see both sides debating whether or not we should enter into this nuclear treaty, so-called, with Russia. Shouldn't you? Wouldn't you think you want to hear that debate? Or is it like global warming? The conclusion's in already? You want to live in that kind of world? Well, I don't. I'm not going to let it happen. I'm going to talk about these things as long as I'm able to. Because I'm going to make a prediction. You want to hear the prediction? Here's the prediction. The establishment itself will one day and very soon realize that Obama is demilitarizing America. And they will move to remove him from office. A point will come when even the most liberal members of the current power structure will realize that their ability to stay in power is being threatened by Obama's weakness and madness. And when that time comes, Obama will be removed by the establishment one way or the other. They'll either impeach him or they'll vote him crazy. Something's going to happen. Obama is worse than Chamberlain, and I believe he will be remembered by history in the same way. Back in 1940, the British were defeated by the Germans in Norway. Many of you don't know about that. It was a small, small battle. But the British were defeated roundly by the Nazis. And finally, the British Parliament had a meeting, a long meeting. And even the far-left Labour Party and its leader, Clement Attlee, realized that Neville Chamberlain had to go. They realized he was not a wartime leader, that if he stayed in power, Britain would lose the war to Nazi Germany. And so the Liberals held a two-day debate. And at the end of it, Chamberlain was given a vote of no confidence. He was thrown out of power, and Churchill became the Prime Minister of England. The problem here is we do not have a parliamentary system. We have a wrecked two-party gangster system where even a mad president cannot be removed from office. Apparently, even a mad president cannot be removed from office with a vote of no confidence. We have one of the worst political systems in the world. A man is dismantling America brick by brick, day by day, and there's virtually no opposition. I'm asking you, where is the rest of our government? Why have you not read about this in the newspapers? Why have you not seen this in the headline instead of some schmuck golfer hitting a ball? Some schmuck moron golfer, you're more interested in that, or some degenerate dancing on a show than you are about your security being ripped out from under you by Obama, signing one college treaty after another. And the Russians are laughing at him right in his face. The Iranians are spitting in his eye. Everyone's laughing at this lunatic. Everyone except the American Fifth Column. They used to be known as the press. They're no longer existent. They have ceased functioning. But where's Congress? Where's the Republican Party? Where is John Boehner? Where the hell is Eric Cantor? Where the hell is the Republican Party on this nuclear situation? Why are you not talking about it? Why is there no discussion about it? The answer is because you're living in a putative dictatorship in the United States of America, a dictatorship of propaganda, which is the predecessor to a dictatorship period. And so I'd like to talk about this today for a few minutes. And here's the question. Do you feel safer today or do you feel less safe today knowing that Obama tomorrow will sign a nuclear treaty with Russia, agreeing to give up one-third of our nuclear weapons and getting zero in return? Nothing. How do you think the Europeans feel today? knowing that he's capitulated to the Russians the same way Chamberlain did to Hitler? How do you think the Czechoslovakians do? All you liberal swine are always referring to your European counterparts. In Europe this, in Europe that, in Norway this, in Europe that, with your smug attitudes. Why don't you go ask your friends in Poland and Czechoslovakia how they feel about this big-eared lunatic giving away all of their security, agreeing not to put up a missile defense shield because Russia said don't do it. I'm going to tell you a side story, then I'm going to come back to these questions. Here's the question. Here's the side story. Yesterday, I flew across the country in a friend's plane. I land in Oakland, California at a private jet port. 6 hours later, my poor dog, Teddy, the 11-pound poodle, was such a good boy, he didn't pee on the plane. He never does. Amazing. He knows not to. It's like special for him. Oh, I have certain techniques as well of not feeding him a certain amount and blah, blah, blah. I don't give him too much water. Like common sense. We get off the plane, we run across the tarmac, and one of the ground crew runs with me. Now, listen to this. He's a blue-collar guy, regular guy with a billet, you know, a hat on, baseball. And the dog starts to relieve himself against the bush, and we're talking, and we're talking, and we're talking, and the dog's leg doesn't come down. I look at him, he looks at me, and still going. I said to him, this looks like a guy who was in a bar all night, and I never saw a dog of any size relieve himself for that length of time. It was almost a Ripley's Believe It or Not, how much he kept in. I don't know where the water came from. That's the funny part of the story. I look over to the right of the runway. I see a monster airplane, a DC-9, an old, monstrous DC-9. But there was something odd about the DC-9. There were 4 to 6 guys in black with black hoods with pump shotguns around the airplane. So I said to the ground guy, I said, is that plane for the Oakland Raiders? Are they coming in or are they leaving town? Why do they need guys with shotguns on it? He said, no, no, Michael. He says, that plane isn't filled with the Oakland Raiders. I said, who's on it? Well, you'll hear the minute I come back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
In many ways, nuclear weapons represent both the darkest days of the Cold War and the most troubling threats of our time. Today, we've taken another step forward in leaving behind the legacy of the 20th century while building a more secure future for our children.
That's the President of the United States of America signing away the security of the United States tomorrow, an arms control treaty with Russia that will set limits on numbers of warheads and launchers, at which the Russians said they can opt out of at any time. No word from the Republicans. They are busy at a golf course. I'm asking you if a nuclear-free world, in your mind, is realistic, given that Iran is about to get the bomb, given that North Korea has several nuclear weapons, given that China is loaded to the hilt with weapons. Are you people that crazy? Don't you understand the danger this lunatic is putting us in with his college dorm mentality? This is like a college dorm guy taking every one of his agenda items like it's something the Marxist American president thinks is great, so let's do it. I'm asking you how this is happening because I thought we had a Congress. I'd like to know where the Congress is. I believe Obama's increased our danger, not decreased our danger. I believe that the time will come. When exactly, I don't know, when the establishment, mainly the liberal establishment, will realize that Obama is not only destabilizing America, but demilitarizing America, and they will seek to remove him from office. That's what I believe could happen in this country. The same way it happened in 1940 when the British Labour Party threw Chamberlain out through a vote of no confidence. The problem is there's no opposition party here. The problem is there's no Churchill. The problem is there's no conservative party. The problem is we have a one-party system. The problems are many. The people are many. The mandarins are few. And yet we are in grave danger. Oh, I forgot to tell you the rest of that story. First rule of radio is when you promise something, you better deliver. So anyway, to get back to Teddy peeing on the bush for a couple of minutes, which would have made any barhound would have been proud of the little guy. He was up to any Irish barhound. I noticed I didn't say Irishman. I said any Irish barhound. He stood there on and on and on. So I look over, I see this monster DC-9, and I see the guys with black and hoods and masks and pump shotguns. I said, who's on it? You know, the sports team? on the private... No, he said, those are illegal aliens being flown back to Mexico by the U.S. Marshals Service. I said, oh, my God. They're actually flying illegal aliens out of America? He said, I said, how often does this happen? He's, oh, Michael, he said, we have these flights, regular flights, three a week. He said, we call it here, we on the ground call this Adios Airways. So I said, great. And I said, well, they come back the next day, they walk right back. He says, it's even worse than that. He said, with one hand, the government spends a fortune. The marshals do their job. They fly them out of the Bay Area, and they can't even take them to Mexico. They deposit them in San Diego, right near the border, and they come right back. Can you believe what this country has become? How schizophrenic and insane it is? Now, that's bad enough. We can disagree or disagree or disagree on illegal aliens all you want. But when it comes to national security, how in the world can you think that unilaterally disarming America, unilaterally disarming America is good for your security and your children's security? Are you liberals that drugged up? Are you that crazy to not see this man as a madman? He reminds me of King Ludwig II, only in a far more sober tone. He is just like King Ludwig II of Bavaria. Tom in Washington, quickly, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I'll tell you, I'm terrified. Michael, I'm just a few years younger than you, and I remember CBS, the early show, that movie you talk about with the metronome.
Michael, I
remember those desks at school with the tops that folded down and the drills. I eventually left northern New Jersey, and I came down here to Washington in the 70s, and I worked for the Defense Department and under Admiral Rickover. And, Michael, I'm terrified and just...
Well, what's the climate in the Defense Department? Are they all that crazy? They don't see that this man is a lunatic?
Honestly, Michael, I think it has to do with Obama and the race thing. I think they're afraid if they say anything...
Are you telling me the whole Pentagon filled with those schmucks with the big hats, all the war heroes are sitting there going, yes, sir, nobody said you're going to kill us all?
Michael, you'd be amazed that people are so afraid of a bad performance rating, they'll do anything to stay on the job.
Savage.
America's first Marxist American president, Barack Obama, has unilaterally decided to sign an arms control treaty with Russia tomorrow without any congressional oversight that will set limits on numbers of warheads and launchers. I don't know if Congress will actually vote on this. I mean, Congress has to find a two-thirds majority to ratify the treaty. Nevertheless, we have a president who is almost a madman, in my opinion, with his desire to impose one lunatic left-wing fantasy after another on America. The American people are still smarting from his illegal, immoral tactics in pushing through socialized medicine. And yet the man is relentless in pushing forward the radical Marxist agenda. It doesn't stop. At some point, though, it has to stop. And I'm asking you if you feel safer knowing that he's cutting our nuclear arsenal, or do you feel less safe? That's a simple question. Let's go to Chicago, WIND. Adam, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I don't think there is any realistic danger in this reduction of our strategic deterrence.
Well, you said that, but now prove it.
Well, I happen to be a lieutenant commander in our Navy, and I'm in the JAG Corps, and I happen to my specialty.
Wait,
is...
You're a lieutenant commander, meaning you're a lawyer, right?
Correct.
So you're not actually a war commander. You try sailors who actually use weapons.
Actually, I did start off working in nuclear submarines, but I transferred into the JAG Corps after I got my law degree.
All right, let's put that aside. So now you're a lawyer in the Navy, and you feel it's fine that Obama's cutting the nuclear arsenal.
I do, simply because after looking at this, strictly by... looking at the number of nuclear weapons, and I'm speaking from just the naval perspective here, we have enough nuclear weapons in our naval arsenal, not to speak of, the Air Force's deterrent, to destroy the entire world many times over.
Well, let's stop right there because that's a big lie. How many of our weapons are actually operational?
What's that?
You heard me. How many of these nuclear weapons are actually functional?
How many, number-wise? We have.
You say you're an expert. You say you're a naval commander. You say you're in the submarine corps. I don't know whether to believe you or not. So since you're a big expert, I'm asking you a very basic question. How many of these nuclear weapons that we currently own are functional?
Well, we have 16 Polaris missiles armed on each of our nuclear-armed submarines. And currently, in our active naval fleet, we are running 32 of those submarines at any given time around the world.
But you're not answering. You didn't answer the question. How many of the nuclear weapons, even on the naval ships, are functional?
On our nuclear submarines that are active, all of those nuclear weapons are functional. They're ready to go at a moment's notice.
Are you sure of that?
I am positive of that.
How do you know they're functional?
Well, strictly because that is what we are...
Well, I'm asking a basic question, which is about the reliability of bombs, planes, submarines, and missiles.
Okay.
And the reason I'm asking it is because we don't really know how many of those bombs, planes, and missiles and submarines are actually functional. We're all assuming that what the left says is true, which is that every one of them has enough weapons to wipe out the world many times over. But in fact, the U.S. never ratified the 1996 Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. So the fact of the matter is we do not know how many of these old weapons are functional.
Well,
in other words, I'm talking about the stockpile. We're only able to use computer simulations and chemical and physical testing to ascertain whether the aging bombs will still go off. Are you aware of that?
Yes, of course that's true. And unless you launch each and every one of those missiles, you could not say with an absolute certainty that each one is going to detonate, effectively. But
all right, so as a prosecutor now, I've established the fact that we both agree that at least some of this phenomenal stockpile of weapons may not be operable. It could be 1%, correct? You would admit that it could be at least a small percent could be inoperable, but from your point of view, it's irrelevant.
Correct. I would concede that.
But I'm taking the position of the prosecutor, and I'm saying, but you have agreed with me, counselor, that some small percent of these weapons might not be operable. Do we agree on that?
Correct, and there are overlapping measures in our deterrent to take that into account.
Okay, so the aging nuclear systems, the reliability of the bombs, of the planes, the missiles, and the submarines is not an issue to you?
I cannot speak to the bombs and the planes, but as far as our naval deterrent goes, no, that is not an issue.
How about nuclear weapons scientists? Where are we getting them from? Who are our nuclear weapons scientists to keep us functional for another 10 years, since we don't seem to have enough nuclear weapons scientists, and we even need to build a new plant at Los Alamos to construct plutonium pits, which are the fissile cores of U.S. warheads? How in the world can you sit there and say that we actually are as safe as we were 10 years ago?
What is your question exactly there, Michael? Are you worried about where our scientists are coming from or our number?
Well, it's a twofold question. Well, first, we're dealing with the fact that a certain percentage of our weapons may not be functional. We don't know how many. And the reason we can't test anymore is because of the CTBT treaty, right?
That would be correct, yes.
Okay, so in other words, we don't really know. We can't test our weapons anymore. But you say there are so many we don't have to worry. I'm now raising the second issue of a new generation of nuclear weapons scientists. Where will they come from?
I cannot speak as an expert to that fact.
Well, I think that as a lieutenant commander, though, you would say that we have reason to be concerned about that, I would think.
I suppose if that issue were raised and there was some legitimate proof to show.
Well, let me ask you this. You seem to be in favor of what the president is doing. How about this? Those further to the left than Obama, if you can imagine there are such people in the United States, those farther to the left than Obama himself have called to scrap one leg of the triad of U.S. nuclear forces. They'd like to scrap the missiles, the submarines and the bombers. Are you aware of that?
I've heard such things, such scuttlebutt, as it were, but yeah, that would be frightening. I do think we need a realistic overlap in our deterrent.
All right, so what if you then become the conservative amongst the anti-nuke crowd, and they say, we don't need all those submarines? What percentage of our submarines do you think you could give up and still have enough deterrence to protect America?
If we're strictly speaking to our submarine fleet, you know, right now it's planned out so as such so that we have a reliable overlap in our deterrence. So if you were to reduce our fleet, then we would have to, you know, reassess the amount, the protocols as far as, you know, how we're actually going to administer those weapons if ever that were needed.
Right. What if the United States were attacked by Russian or Chinese missiles, nuclear missiles or torpedoes, and the old standard of launch on warning is no longer in effect because Obama said we're no longer going to launch on warning. We're no longer going to launch under attack. Didn't Obama say that he's not going to use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear nations, even if they attack us with chemical or biological weapons? Do you think that makes sense as well?
If that were true, I would not think that made sense. However, given the updates that we have been given, that is more of a seems to be more of a radio talk show talking point as opposed to reality.
Wait a minute. I didn't say it. Obama said it. Obama said that he's not going to attack any country that might attack us with chemical or biological weapons. He said that. I didn't say it. So who's the radio host, him or me?
Let me just put it to you this way. There's a difference between what he said and the orders that were issued. So I guess you could say there's a difference between what he said and what he meant. But the orders that were issued...
All right, so he, in other words, he was the radio talk show host, not me. So another, he said it, in other words, to get ratings. Is that right?
I would say that he tried
so to... So he said it to get ratings from the crowd that doesn't listen to liberal radio. That's what he did it for, then? He really will attack a country that attacks us with chemical and biological weapons? Well, I feel better. I'll sleep better tonight.
That is true, yes. There has been no significant change as far as our orders have been issued up to this point, at least. We've been knowing...
Oh, but what about Iran and other rogue states who are pursuing nuclear weapons? And what about the proliferation of other weapons of mass destruction? I mean, you as a naval man understand that war is inevitable at some point in the history of a nation. It comes and it goes. It's a terrible thing. But you and I both know it's coming again.
Yes, unfortunately, we may have to concede that point, yes.
All right. No, so we're both Americans here. We can disagree on the nuclear arsenal, the nuclear weapons. We know that wars come, wars go. And you look back at the sad history of humanity, war is part of the human condition. And we know that there are nations that are capable of wiping us off the planet, namely China. Doesn't that worry you?
Just the fact that there are nations out there that possess the weapons to completely annihilate us and every other human being on this planet, yes, of course that worries me. I mean,
all right, so given that we have an atheistic communist enemy that has no compunction whatsoever to worry about humanity, why should we be the good Samaritan who says, we'll drop our weapons first? Do you actually think that they're going to take that as a mark of strength or a mark of weakness?
I think the underlying reason that was given was put out there in the hopes that we could further develop talks among all nations that are not considered rogue states, meaning all nations not counting North Korea, namely, and potentially Iran in the future, that there might be some realistic talk among so-called civilized nations, you know, that...
I understand that, but you agree, by the way, that the nuclear weapons actually prevented World War III.
If other nations happen to possess nuclear weapons and we did not have our nuclear deterrent, of course, yes, that was definitely a significant contributing factor, yes.
All right. So for half a century, about, a world war was prevented because of mutual assured destruction. I think we can both agree on that.
Of course.
All right. So now the administration comes up with a nuclear posture review, and they're boasting about it as though it's something brand new and wonderful. But what world do they actually live in? Don't they understand that they're throwing away a piece of history's most successful deterrent by cutting our nuclear arsenal? Don't you think this is recklessness and vanity on the part of Obama?
Unfortunately, that is simply not the reality. That we are not relinquishing any of our deterrents, any significant piece of our deterrent that is going to protect our country.
Well, wait a minute. You're saying that, but there are people who disagree with you. The reason I know that there are people who disagree with you is because there were months of bitter argument inside the Defense Department about this, who disagree with you completely, and they're defense experts, as you claim to be. Many think that you're completely wrong. Many think that this policy will destroy our capability of defending ourselves because the enemy could wipe out all of our submarines and we wouldn't have the capacity to counterstrike them.
I have had the opportunity to run into opposing views. I would have to tell you that is true. However, I would have to say...
I'm sorry. You're a very rational man. You said you did or you did not run into opposing views.
I have had the opportunity to run into opposing views. Yes.
Okay. So there are people who are probably to the right of me with regard to what I'm saying.
As scary as that might be, yes. I'm glad
to hear that there's actually some of the Neanderthals left in the Defense Department. I thought that they all left. So we still have some Neanderthals, so to speak, who feel the way I do, and even more strongly so, that what Obama's doing is actually weakening us, not strengthening us.
Definitely.
Okay. So what about the fact that deterrence has worked? Doesn't that work in the left wing? Don't they understand that deterrence actually worked?
I would have to say people that in the Defense Department that I regularly interact with and those individuals that I happen to know their political views, I would have to say there's people both on the left, right, and center, right down the line, that all agree.
All right, look, this has been a very vigorous and interesting debate. I don't think that I feel satisfied today that you're right, and I don't think I've moved you the needle on your position as well. But let me ask you something. Obama's signing this tomorrow, correct? Doesn't Congress have to ratify this? Two-thirds of the Senate has to say yes?
If it's going to be an official treaty, yes. Two-thirds of the Congress has to agree with it, yes.
All right, so therefore what you and I have just done will be a sort of a prelude to what should be going on in Congress, where the American people can get to hear both sides, right?
Let's face it, Michael. Anytime you are debating about something drop all the fancy words, as terrifying as nuclear weapons, there should be a vigorous debate on any change to our policy regarding that.
I understand. At least we agree that we live in a republic, not a dictatorship. But how can he sign a treaty tomorrow without having debated this before the American people or before Congress? Why does he have such audacity to think he has the power to do this when the American people are left high and dry on his last push? Well, I don't think you want to answer that because you're a politician at the end of the day, and I'm just a talk show host, like the president seems to be. Adam, thank you for calling. You've given me a lot of, I think you've given my audience a lot of thought. I'm not at all convinced that we're safer because of it. I think we're much less safe. I believe that the left is a lunatic fringe, and I believe that the left wing in this country is taking us over the cliff. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. Left-wing professor, now president, wants a nuclear-free world in a world that's quite dangerous. So I said to you, we just had a great debate, a starting point, which, of course, Congress should be doing for us, but they're nowhere to be found. We should have a vigorous debate in the press. They're not doing it. They're talking about some golfer by the name of Tiger. And Obama's acting as though he's a dictator on the world stage, and everything he does is a godsend. Well, let me tell you something. I come from another generation. Maybe that's why I see the world differently than most of you do. And I wrote this yesterday. I was bored to death after 4 hours in the plane, and I knew I had 2 more hours to go. I was somewhere over Almogado, New Mexico. I don't know where we were. It was frightening. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. I was past playing in the aisle with Teddy with the ball already. He couldn't take us. He put himself to sleep. So I started to think about the mutual assured destruction that I grew up with, the world I grew up in the 50s and the world I live in today. And I started to write these, I don't know, these couplets. Some of them are good. Some of them are not. Listen to them. From Eisenhower to Obama in 2 generations. From Ben Casey to Nurse Jackie in 2 generations. From mutual assured destruction to assured national destruction in 2 generations. From Chevrolet to Kia San in 2 generations. From Evan Rude to Always Rude in 2 generations. From John Wayne to Lady Gaga in 2 generations. From Frank Sinatra to Sin and Gotcha in 2 generations. From I Spy to I Cry in 2 generations. From I Love Lucy to I Love Selfie in 2 generations. From Al Einstein to Al Gore in 2 generations. From I Have a Dream to I Have a Scheme in 2 generations. From Catcher in the Rye to Ketchup on the Fly in 2 generations. From the Eagle to the Beagle. From the Eagle to the Beagle. From LSD to ADD. From Cardigans to Partykins. From Cub Scouts to Scouting Cubs. Saturday.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We've been arguing over Obama cutting America's nuclear arsenal unilaterally with virtual no gain from Russia. Russia says, yeah, sure, Yankee, go ahead. You cut. We'll sign. Yeah, we'll sign. Yeah, we'll sign. But we can withdraw anytime we want. And we have Hillary Clinton celebrating it again, like health care, that this is wonderful, safe and secure deterrent, the same rubbish of the left, the same pap coming out of the liberal establishment we've been hearing for 50 straight years. I am telling you, we are less safe under Obama than we were before Obama. So let's listen to clip 4 now with Clinton reinforcing the college teacher Obama telling us how wonderful it is to cut our nuclear arsenal.
We are enforcing our commitment to the NPT by stating clearly for the first time that the United States will not use or threaten to use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear weapons states that are party to the NPT and in compliance.
Let's stop. Did you hear what she just said to you? That means if a rogue nation that doesn't have nuclear weapons drops a chemical or biological bomb in New York City, she and Obama have said categorically, we will not use nuclear weapons against that state. So doesn't that tend to say to the state security services, you're not responsible for any of your rogue elements in your country? You don't understand any of this. It's crazy. The country's like a madhouse. Tax day is next week. About a week from now. Tax day. Tax day, huh? It's not a problem for 47% of American households. It's a problem for me. It's a problem for you. Problem for virtually everyone who listens to conservative talk radio. Probably not a problem for 80% of the deadbeats who listen to the ABC, CBS, NBC propaganda or read the newspapers like it's the Holy Grail. 47% of U.S. households will pay no federal income taxes for 2009. Did you hear what I just said? About half the people, in other words, in the country are paying no income tax. So I ask you, what country are you actually living in? That means one out of two of us are paying for the other half? I have to support drug addicts. I have to support gangsters. I have to support illegal aliens. It's unbelievable to me. It's astounding what's going on in this country. How could a tax system exempt half the country from paying for programs that benefit everyone, including national defense, public safety, infrastructure, and education? Why is it that the top 10% of earners paid about 73% of all the income taxes collected by the federal government? Did you hear what I just said? Don't you think I should have more of a vote than you? I do. I personally think that your vote should be tied to your taxes. And if you pay no taxes, you should have no vote. I've said that before. Why the hell should you be entitled to vote for anything if you don't contribute to the society? I think that there should be an absolute calibration according to income tax. The more you pay, the more votes you get. The less you pay, the less votes you get. You pay nothing, you get no votes. Then you'll have a country where the bums on the bottom aren't going to tell the people who are making a living, you owe me more. Give me medicine, give me crutches, give me a trip to Las Vegas, give me a trip to Israel, give me a trip to Bulgaria, buy me Viagra so I can go to a hooker in Czechoslovakia because I have ADD. This is insanity. It's unbelievable to me. The bottom 40% of you make a profit from the federal income tax. You get more money in income tax credits than they would otherwise owe in taxes. So for you, your government sends you a check for the bottom 40% of America. 50% of the people are getting something for nothing, said Curtis Dubé, senior tax policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. So there it is. And now you understand why America is a schizophrenic nation. Now you understand why there's social disharmony in America. Now you understand why we call Obama the first Marxist president. Now you understand that this has to end. Now you understand why the people who are earning a living are not going to take this anymore. Now you understand why the danger we are in extends way beyond taxation, Medicare, Medicaid, health care. And now he's pushing the destruction of our nuclear arsenal. Obama's doing this, and nobody says a word. Not one word from anybody in the military. I feel as though we're living in communist China. Because you got to understand, I'm going to say it like it is. I'm not hiding anything. I think that I'm the elder statesman of conservative talk radio. I actually didn't believe it, but I've reached that point. I'm giving myself a title. I know that I'm a national phenomenon in many ways, but I am the elder statesman. Most of the guys are 20 years younger than me, which is fine. And some of them are good, but most of them don't even understand what this country has come from. They kind of read about it, but as much as I hate to admit it in a way, I've lived through it. From Eisenhower to Obama in two generations. From Ben Casey to Nurse Jackie in two generations. From mutual assured destruction to assured national destruction, two generations. From Evan Rude to Always Rude in two generations. From John Wayne to Lady Gaga in two generations. From I Spy to I Cry in two generations. From I Love Lucy to I Love Loosely in two generations. From Al Einstein to Al Gore in two generations. From I Have a Dream to I Have a Scheme in two generations. From Catcher in the Rye to Ketchup on the Fly in two generations. Starlets to harlots, preachers to breachers, athletes to sexleets, rabbis to sandflies, Boy Scouts to Toy Scouts, Girl Scouts to Twirl Scouts, from the Eagle to the Beagle in two generations. From LSD to ADD. From cardigans to partykins. From Cub Scouts to Scouting Cubs. From aspirin to OxyContin. From Lady Jane to Let's Get Insane. From Science to Lie-Ince. From Law to Claw. From Zip Guns to Machine Guns. From Manhattans to Cosmos. From Red Book to Spread Books. From Acorn the Tree to Acorn the Spree. From babies to puppies, from guppies to yuppies, from private vets to private jets, from soldiers who kill to soldiers without will, from lassie to sassy, from religion to pigeons, from eons to peons, from rapists to offenders, from stickball to speedballs, from Gallo to Lafitte, from Matus to Chartreuse, from Milltown to Prozac, from the Air Force to a Bear Force, from the Navy to Loose Gravy, from the Army to I'm Swami, from Israel to Fizreal, from Taiwan to Spizwan, from the Dragon and the Eagle to the Dragon and the Beagle, from Dragsters to Drag Queens, from Redwoods to Deadwoods, from Health Foods to Wealth Foods, from Heroes to Zeros, from UFOs to IOUs, from Hirsute to Lawsuit, from Melarolls to Melanine, from Niagara to Viagra, from Coney Island to Survival Island, from the Five Families to the Sly Families, from Al Capone to Sly Stallone, from Ike to Spikes, Truman to Untruman, Truman to Untruman, from Truman to the Untruman, from Reagan to Swayman, Rayburn to Pelosi, from the Eagle to the Beagle, from the Bible to the Legal. That's the story of America the Great to America that Greats. All right, Hal, we're going to take a break now. We're going to take another set. A few more minutes, we'll be back to pick up the old horn right here on the Savage Nation. Tax day is dreaded for half of America and ignored by the other half who live off of us. 50% of us pay no taxes. 40% of the bottom get a check back from the government for doing nothing, for being deadbeats. And they're the people who put Obama in power. The result is a communist government that exempts the people who put them in office. That's the result, period. Who was it who said that when everyone gets the vote, eventually, those with nothing will vote themselves a raise and put people who are making a living out of business. So that's one thing. So we have that disequity. It wasn't started by Obama, but it's certainly going to get worse under Obama as we have to pay for the health care of tens of millions of people who should be paying for their own health care. But we've been talking about other things on the show. We've been talking about the nuclear situation where Obama has unilaterally said he's going to get rid of one-third of our nuclear weapons. And there's Hillary Clinton, the lifetime liberal, saying that this is wonderful, that we're not going to use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear weapon states, even if they attack us with chemical or biological weapons. It's utterly unbelievable to me. It's inviting them to attack us because there's no consequences. In other words, let's say you're a non-nuclear nation, but you hate America, and you have a rogue element inside your country that, if you know what's good for you, if you're a strong man running the country, You have your Secret Service keep an eye on them and capture them and control them because you're afraid that America will wipe you off the planet. And there goes all the fun you've been having. Now suddenly you wake up to find out, hey, you can actually secretly encourage this rogue element to attack New York City with a chemical or biological weapon, and there'll be no consequences for you because you can say, I didn't have anything to do with it. And Hillary said, terrific, we're not going to strike you with a nuclear weapon. It's astounding to me that this has happened and there's no discussion of it. San Francisco, 860 on the dial. Phil, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, these nuclear weapons are America's birthright and inheritance. And not only Obama didn't make one single contribution to physics or science, but he has the audacity to dismantle our nuclear weapons that were invented.
Well, Obama is an enemy of the state as far as I'm concerned. Put that down on a piece of paper. Mark it on ice. I think Obama is trying to destroy America, period, from top to bottom. How's that? Does that work for you? I do not know of one policy this character has pushed forward that is in the interest of the American people.
I agree. And second, he has the audacity to dismantle our nuclear weapons, yet these were invented by generations of Americans better than he, yet he has the gall to take it away.
Obama has not created anything. Obama has given the world nothing. By his own admission, he said all he's ever done is push papers. I remember when he gave that speech, he actually gave himself away and he actually caught himself, and he made it into a joke. He said, well, all I actually have ever done is push papers. He's a classic egghead. Unfortunately, he's president of the United States of America, and there's no opposition party, and there's no press.
Michael, my second point is that this nuclear nonproliferation is not necessary for the United States. We have already shown responsibility with nuclear weapons. In the Gulf War, we didn't use nuclear weapons. We didn't use
nuclear weapons. When a Navy SEAL fired a rifle at a pirate, I think they were called up on charges. You have a deballed, debased United States military. What nuclear weapons? They didn't even let them fire a pistol when the U.S. Cole was blown in half under Bill Clinton. I mean, this is a joke. Some U.S. Navy, they're floating birth clinics. They're college dormitories for kids who can't find a husband. The U.S. government pays for their birth, for their pregnancy. They're like dormitories with propellers. 1-800-449-8255. Tax day next week. Dreaded by half the country. Ignored by the other half that lives off the other half. Go file a return. 50% of you pay nothing. You're the ones who put Obama in power. The other 50% of us who actually create the jobs and generate the taxes did not put Obama in power. Okay, so that's the story. We're the ones who actually support America. You hear this? In 2007, about 38% of households paid no federal income tax. By 2008, the number jumped to 49% of the households. That went up 11% in 1 year. How's that possible? George Bush did it. In 2008, the socialist George W. Bush, I called him a fiscal socialist 2 years ago, signed a law providing most families with rebate checks of $300 to $1,200. That was socialism. Last year, Obama the Marxist, we went from Bush the socialist to Obama the Marxist, signed the economic recovery law that expanded some tax credits and created others. So there it is. So we've had one after the other of a left-wing president. There it is. That's the story. That's the story. So you'll be paying much more next year if you earn and make a living. If you don't make a living, you'll be getting a lot more from the government under Obama. Fact of the matter is that the top 10% of earners paid about 73% of all the income tax collected by your federal government. The top 10% of earners paid about 73% of the income taxes collected by the federal government, and the rest of you lived off it. So when you say get the rich, eat the rich, screw the rich, blah, 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 what you're saying is let's all commit national suicide. But you don't know that because you've been brainwashed in college to think that the country can run on air itself. And unfortunately, Obama has fed at the same trough of fantasy. Obama has drunk from the same well of lunacy. Obama has hosted cocktail parties serving the same lunacy as the beverage du jour. He has drunk at faculty parties. They pass around the cocktail of America's evil. Then they eat a canapé that says a white man is evil. They next eat a little sandwich that says America has to be made more fair. There has to be reparations and redistribution of wealth. And we've heard all of this before. It was tried in the Soviet Union. We know where that led. But it's happening right before your eyes, only because it's not being done at the barrel of a gun. You don't understand it's being done. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some stupidity and drug addicts. I'll just watch the girls. I'll stop right here. It's not a nightclub. Open the newspaper. What do you see? A slut falling down on herself in a nightclub with her skirt raised. Or a cheating golfer. Wherever you turn, the press magnates of our time, the Hearsts of our time, continue to wave the red skirts of deceit in your face. They continue to lift the red skirts of vileness in your face. All the while, America is going up in smoke. This is, of course, one man's opinion. But I didn't drink of the cocktail called stupidity.
Savage.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand and welcome the 44th President of the United States.
The nuclear posture review we are releasing today represents a milestone in the transformation of our nuclear forces and the way in which we approach nuclear issues. We are recalibrating our priorities to prevent nuclear proliferation and nuclear terrorism. And we are reducing the role and number of weapons in our arsenal while maintaining a safe, secure, and effective deterrent to protect our nation, allies, and partners.
This is the same lying Secretary of State, the same lying head of Homeland Security, the same lying pack of... Do you actually believe that Hillary Clinton is maintaining a safe, secure deterrent to protect our nation, allies, and partners? Is that the same way that Janet Napolitano is protecting our border? Maintaining a... She cuts the number of Border Patrol agents and then says, we're cutting the fence, but we're going to maintain a safe, secure deterrent to illegal aliens coming across the border. This one says, we're cutting the number of nuclear weapons, but we're going to maintain a safe, secure deterrent to protect our nation. What, because she says that it's true? And of course... The head article here in the local newspaper is how to find the perfect hamburger. And, of course, in Washington, D.C., he goes and throws a baseball out at the Washington Nationals baseball game, not the Washington Nationalist baseball team. That's what we need is a Washington Nationalist baseball team. And there's half boos and half cheers. So they've weakened our national security. Unless Congress steps up to the plate, I don't even know if there is a Congress anymore. I think they disappeared. I think John Boehner fainted from fear during the Obama thing because he had to actually stand up and make believe he cared. I think John Boehner actually went out in a puff of smoke. Where's the Republican Party? Weakened our national security. And so what do you think this is going to do? That means that the people who hate us, and there are plenty of them, some of them inside the government itself, but let's say people outside the government who hate us, are going to develop new chemical biological weapons and weaponized computers to wipe out our, in other words, a cyber attack. So by saying that we're going to not use nuclear weapons against someone who uses a non-nuclear weapon against us, we've told our enemies, go ahead and develop as quickly as you can alternative weapons of mass destruction. And so go and develop a plague, because if you hit us with it, let's say you wipe out all of New York City with a bug. That's okay, because we won't strike you back with a nuclear weapon, because the vain president wants to go down in history as the man who eliminated nuclear weapons. And so let's try a chemical attack, for example, on Chicago by another nation. Go ahead and do it, because we'll never strike you with a nuclear weapon, because the vain president wants to be the first president to eliminate nuclear weapons. Do you understand this? I don't know how to explain it to you. These are the seeds of destruction being sown by the most radical administration, the most divisive administration in the history of the United States of America. The new policy certainly is not going to deter Iran. The only thing that will deter Iran is a message that you would hear on the news the following morning to the effect of, ladies and gentlemen, the temperature over Tehran is 2,000 degrees and rising. But you won't hear that. In fact, we won't even fire a conventional weapon at Iran. That's why he's laughing at us. That's why Ahmadinejad spit in Obama's face today and said, you're an amateur. You're an amateur, he called him today. It certainly won't reduce the probability of war. And I raised a question earlier today. What about our aging nuclear arsenal? What are we going to do with that? We have many nuclear weapons, it is true, but how many of them are functional? We kept hearing, oh, Russia has old weapons that are falling apart. Well, so do we. We have an awful lot of our weapons are inoperable. We don't know how many, because we can't test any of them. They cannot be tested underground, for example, anymore. Imagine with the global warming hysterics, what they would do then. Now, all of these stories can be found posted up on michaelsavage.com. I suggest that you not read any of them, because you'll get sick, as I do every day. You get sick when you read these stories. You can get sick to your stomach when you realize that every day and every way, Obama and his Marxist minions are making America less and less safe. Every day and in every way, he is worse than Chamberlain. Every day and in every way, he is capitulating to the enemies of freedom. Every day and in every way, the man is trying to humiliate the United States of America. I don't have to go through the whole history of this, do I? I'll tell you again, though, what happened. We've had such idealists in the past in the West. We've had such socialist dreamers, Fabian socialists as Obama in the past, but never quite as extreme. This is an extreme form of the mental illness called liberalism. But if you look at the 20s or 30s, I know it's considered ancient history to many of you, but it's worth looking at. Back in the 20s and 30s, leaders of the West, in Great Britain in particular, bowed to Hitler and Mussolini, just the way Obama is bowing to China and Russia. And they signed documents such as the Locarno Treaty and the Munich Agreement. What were they? Well, Neville Chamberlain signed them, and what he did was he gave Nazi Germany increasingly more power. At the same time, England was cutting back on military expenditures because the lunatic Chamberlain, who is in many ways Obama's intellectual grandfather, the lunatic Chamberlain believed that if England reduced their military posture, Germany would reduce their military posture. The lunatic socialist Chamberlain thought that if he acted nice, Hitler would act nicer. And so the lunatic Chamberlain kept diminishing the British military. And while he was doing that, thank God Britain had a Churchill and they had a Conservative Party that was continuing to develop weapons. Had Churchill and the Conservative Party not developed, for example, some of the weapons in the 1930s against Chamberlain's will, behind his back actually, Britain would have been speaking German. Britain would have been speaking German because they wouldn't have had the great Spitfire that was developed during the 1930s while Chamberlain was deballing the military. Churchill and the Conservatives were building some of the most important weapons that would save Britain, particularly the Spitfire and the Great Battle of Britain, the war over the skies where Britain lost some of its best men, the young men of Cambridge, who actually in those days went to war for the country instead of went to war against the country. And so we have a historical comparison here. And so I'll make it quick. So Chamberlain, Obama's intellectual grandfather, gives Nazi Germany more and more power. And they cut in, and he's cutting England's military back, cutting back on military expenditures the way Hillary Clinton is doing. And so by the time Hitler was ready to strike, England was so anemic it was barely able to survive the Nazi onslaught. Chamberlain, like Obama, was so afraid of the terrors of war that he forgot that a strong arsenal is the best way to prevent a war. And what happened in 1940, the British went to aid Norway after Norway had been invaded by the Nazis. Little Norway fought. They fought as best as they could, but the British got their butts kicked. They got so humiliated in Norway that finally even the far-left Socialist Labor Party and its leader, Clement Attlee, realized that Chamberlain was not a war leader. He was not capable of leading England during a war. And they feared that they would lose any war, and they knew a war was coming. They'd lose a war if he was the prime minister. Now, listen to what I'm saying to you. Here's the most important part. It wasn't the Conservative Party that said it. They knew it. But at that point, after the Norway debacle, even the far-left Labour Party and its leader, Clement Attlee, realized that Chamberlain had to go. And what they did was they held a two-day debate. And at the end of it, Chamberlain was given a vote of no confidence, and he was thrown out of power. And Churchill became the prime minister who saved England. And I predict that the establishment will eventually realize that Obama is demilitarizing America, destabilizing America, and they will eventually move to remove him from office on some charges, and I don't know what they might be. I believe a point will come when even the most far-left members of the current power structure will come to understand that their ability to stay in power and the nation's survival itself is being threatened by Obama's phenomenal madness and weakness. And I think that when that time comes, Obama will be removed by the left leadership. I believe that Obama is worse than Chamberlain, and I believe that Obama will be remembered by history in the same way. That's my monologue, worse than Chamberlain. I'll take your calls right now on the Savage Nation at 1-800-449-8. I mean, this is horrible stuff. You think I enjoy thinking about this? I don't. I mean, I lay awake at night now saying I think I'm living in a mad world. Every day this man shocks me as to not only the madness of his policies, because I've heard all this crap before. I went to university. I earned a PhD. I was around these schmucks. I know how they talk. I knew who they were. I knew many of these putzes. None of them ever ran nothing. They never did anything. All they did was go to their same faculty parties, and they talked no nukes, this and that, no nuke. They didn't know what the hell they were talking about. They never earned a dime in their life. They never produced a product, nothing. They never wrote a book anybody bought. published by academic presses that nobody bought. Their friends were on the boards, the editorial boards of the academic presses. They thought they were authors because they wrote a stupid book, a left-wing book that they forced their students to buy. I know these schmucks. Guess what? They're running America now. So now they're trying out all their training wheel ideas. Now let's see. We got socialized medicine just like Brother Castro. Let's push through. No nukes, no nukes, no nukes. Can we do that? Can we do it, Barry? Sure. Sure. Let's do that too. What's next? What's next, Barry? Shock America tomorrow with another far left lunatic plan, because there is no opposition party, Barry. As you well know, you've destroyed the Republican Party because it never existed. What you actually did, Barry, was show us that there is no opposition. What you actually did, Barry, was show us that the only opposition is coming from the American people themselves. But you and your friends in the media are trying to turn the Tea Parties into Nazis, aren't you? You have the audacity, you un-American left-wing bastards, to say that the actual Americans are the enemies of the country. You bastards, all of you. You left-wing slime. You are the enemies of this country. We are the patriots, you bastards, you Mandarin bastards. You are the enemies of this country. There's 400 of you. 400 of you bastards are trying to say that we're the enemies because we believe in the Constitution. You swine, you. I'll stop here.
Savage.
You know, there's certain things happen in life that are pretty astonishing. At the same time that the interloper from Hawaii or Indonesia, and I love during the ball game, he says, I'm just a kid from the south side of Chicago. I just love it. The man makes himself up as he goes along. At the same time that the interloper is destroying our nuclear arsenal, the man who armed the atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima died today. It's astonishing to me. Morris Dick Jepson dies at 87. Weapons specialist armed the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima. On August 6, 1945, Jepson and another man armed a bomb called Little Boy aboard the B-29 Superfortress Enola Gay. The bombing is credited with bringing an early end to World War II, which is certainly true. Many of you listening to the show would not be here today because your fathers or grandfathers probably would have died in fighting in Japan. The estimate was between 500,000 and a million American men would have died fighting to the bitter end because the Japanese were arming even the old ladies with bamboo sticks to kill Americans should they invade the home islands. You don't know any of that because you've read revisionist history. But nevertheless, this hero died today, the very day, almost within a day, that Obama is destroying our nuclear stockpile. Look how the country has fallen so rapidly. Take a look at Morris Dick Jepson, one of America's great heroes, aboard the Enola Gay, died at 87. Jepson, a retired scientist and businessman, died March 30th, a few days ago, of complications related to old age at Summerlin Hospital Medical Center in Las Vegas, said his wife, Molly. The historic combat mission on August 6, 1945, was the only one Jepson ever flew. Worried about his family's safety, you see the world he lives in? He remained silent for decades about his role in the attack that killed 80,000 people, leveled two-thirds of a Japanese city, and ignited controversy for having unleashed atomic power as a weapon. The mission is credited with helping to bring an early end to the war. 3 days after the bombing of Hiroshima, another B-29 dropped an atomic bomb on Nagasaki, prompting a Japanese surrender. What you don't know is the Japanese were not going to surrender because the Japanese military was raised in the code of Bushido, which is to never, ever quit. Never, never quit. And as a result of their militancy, this is why it happened. Navigator Theodore Dutch Van Kirk, 89, the only surviving member of the 12-man Enola Gay crew, told the Times that Jepson was, quote, quiet, efficient, and businesslike during the mission. He wasn't the type of guy to blow his own horn. At the time, Jepson was 23 years old. Can you imagine? 23 years old. Second lieutenant when he's chosen to climb into the bomb bay on a coin toss. With him was weaponeer Navy Captain William Deke Parsons. Together they began arming the bomb with Jepson acting as assistant handing over tools. They did that very early in the mission in the first half hour, said Dick Dasso, curator of modern military aircraft at the Smithsonian. After that, they had to come inside the cabin because the bomb bay wasn't pressurized. A few hours later, Jepson made a final visit to the bay to change out three green safety plugs, each the size of a salt shaker, for the red plugs that armed the nuclear weapon. He made his way to the cockpit And he told the plane's pilot, Colonel Paul W. Tibbetts, Jr., that the bomb core little boy was set to go. Once Jepson felt the B-29 jerk up, he knew the bomb had been dropped. People were looking down and seeing this enormous cloud coming up and the destruction spreading, Jepson told Time magazine in 2005. And that's the point that it's somber, because you know a lot of people are getting destroyed down there in that city. After the 12-hour flight, the plane returned to Tinian Island in the Pacific, where Jepson was unexpectedly greeted by a good friend who was a Navy lieutenant. They were sharing dinner when a Navy officer asked Jepson, "What did you do today?" "I think we ended the war today," he said. Morris Richard Jepson was born June 23, 1922, in Logan, Utah, one of three sons of Robert and Elsie Jepson. While he was growing up in Carson City, Nevada, his father worked in agricultural education for the state. At age 19, Jepson joined the military and was part of a group that spent 10 months studying engineering and radar at Yale and Harvard universities and MIT. This was before they took lunatics and put them into Yale and Harvard, who now teach ethnic studies. Now, in those days, he went to the real Yale, the real Harvard, the real MIT, before they introduced courses that were worthless garbage. And so at 19, he goes there and he spends 10 months studying engineering and radar, and not ethnic studies. With several others, he was assigned to remote Wendover, Utah, in the 509th Composite Group. It was the first military unit formed to wage nuclear war. Now listen to this. After the war, this war hero, Jepson, studied, taught a doctorate in physics at UC Berkeley, my alma mater, working at its radiation lab and Lawrence Livermore Laboratory. He founded a number of companies, unlike Obama, who founded nothing. This man founded a number of companies, including Applied Radiation Corp., which built electron beam accelerators for nuclear physics research, and CryoDry Corp., a maker of industrial microwave ovens. See, he produced things. Destruction on one hand that ended the war, and technology that advanced civilization, unlike Obama, who's given the world nothing. A longtime resident of Carmel, California, retired to Las Vegas 20 years ago. In addition to Molly, his wife of 48 years, Jepson is survived by a brother, four daughters, two sons, 11 grandchildren, and 10 great-grandchildren. He died, as I said, on March 30th, so that's within a week of Obama dismantling America's nuclear arsenal. I don't know, sometimes life imitates art, art imitates life, or things come together in a confluence that is astonishing. It's like the end of an era, the end of a, not of a generation, the end of a sane, strong, proud nation. It's fallen into insanity and disrepair. And Obama is actually the symptom, not the cause. Obama is the symptom of the insanity. Obama is the symptom of the decay. Obama is the symptom of the disrespect that the people have for this country. Obama is the symptom of all the negatives that so many of the people of the United States of America hold for this great nation. Obama is not the problem. Obama is the symptom of the disease that is metastasized. It started first in the universities, and now it is spread throughout the entire country. And so, ladies and gentlemen, the question is, how does this end? How does this end when we have a radical Marxist American as president who has never held a job, who has never produced a product, who has never done anything but push papers and have long, long, long talks at night in frat houses with his friends, and now they're pushing forward every radical left-wing plan ever talked about in universities?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's some big news for you. I don't know if it's been published yet. Beowulf, have you seen this? I just got this from Congressman Culberson. lying charges have been dropped against two Navy SEALs. It came out this afternoon from the Virginian pilot. Have you heard this, you guys? Prosecutors have dropped lying charges against two Navy SEALs implicated in a detainee abuse case. Petty Officer First Class Julio Huertas and Petty Officer Second Class Jonathan Keefe, both SEALs, still face courts-martial for allegedly not protecting a reputed terrorist after his capture in Fallujah, Iraq. Huertas faces a second charge of impeding an investigation. Can you believe what's going on here? What these fat-ass generals who have nothing to do but sit and persecute our men are doing? Charges that the men lied to an investigator were formally withdrawn Tuesday in response to earlier testimony from a Naval Criminal Investigative Service agent who said he did not read them their rights. Okay? The SEALs and their lawyers met with prosecutors and the judge for the final time in Norfolk before the proceeding moved to Camp Victory in Baghdad. Lawyers for both SEALs requested the change so the men can face their accuser in court. Ahmed Hassim Abdel is described as the mastermind of the murders of four American contractors in Fallujah in 2004. The SEALs now helped capture him in September. But they did their job so well that George Bush brought court martials against them. Can you believe this? Keith's trial is scheduled to start April 19th. The case against Mr. Huertas will follow. Greg McCormick, Keith's civilian attorney, said, I think the government has a very weak case. Now, let's pause right there. The government has a weak case, but they won't stop pursuing it against Navy SEALs. A third SEAL, Petty Officer Second Class Matthew McCabe, will be court-martialed next month in Norfolk. You know what he did? He allegedly punched Abdet in the stomach while Keith and Huertas were in the room. The accused SEALs are assigned to SEAL Team 10, a joint expeditionary base, Little Creek and Virginia Beach. This story can make a strong man weep. Thank you, George Bush. Thank you, Barack Obama, for making America less safe because of your insane PC policies. Well, that's the latest on the SEAL case. There's an awful lot more out there. An awful lot more. I mean, you know that Obama is not happy with just pushing through socialized medicine. The man's on a roll. Well, he just agreed to nuclear disarmament. Russia, of course, said they could opt out of the nuclear disarmament deal. Can you believe this? Is Obama stupid? Is he naive? Is he insane? Is he a traitor? How about all of the above? Russia says that we're signing a deal with Obama, right? But we could opt out of this at any time. So Russia makes no demands on America until they see if this will get past the Senate. If it looks like it will pass the Senate, Russia will suddenly have concerns over any U.S. defensive missile system in Europe of any size, and they will withdraw unless Obama, the meek, surrenders all of the missiles. The Russians can smell the weakness in this administration due to Obama's megalomania. Furthermore, giving up the right of a preemptive nuclear strike defeats the whole purpose of having nukes and basically leaves us the only option of killing somebody back instead of being able to use them as a threat. Who knows what might happen with Iran and North Korea. Obama's empty nuclear posturing, by the way, is a big story. Obama's threats to hit Iran with tough sanctions if his entreaties to talk are rejected are increasingly being exposed as hollow. That kind of wishy-washiness is something that Iran and other rogue regimes understand. By comparison, the theoretical language contained in the nuclear posture review seems more like, well, academic posturing at an academic meeting by Obama. So if Libya attacks us with chemical weapons, as long as they hadn't exported the technology, we will not use nuclear weapons against them. Do you feel safer under Obama? Nobody feels safer under Obama except those on the drugs put out by the medical establishment. Still waiting for that Obamacare bounce. Atlanta Journal-Constitution by Kyle Wingfield, posted on Michael Savage. Yet another opinion poll indicates, the public was not sighing in relief after Obamacare passed. This one is from liberal CBS News, which calls the American public increasingly skeptical about the new health laws. 53% of Americans say they disapprove of the new reforms. Now, note this poll is conducted amongst all Americans, not registered voters, not likely voters, not English speakers. You hear this? Now, could you imagine what the numbers would really be if they only polled likely voters? Beowulf, can you imagine the lie that's coming out?
The Dems have got to be frantic about this. This means that every sector of America is opposed to this, not just the right.
What do you want to talk about today? Cap and trade, Obamacare, death panels, income redistribution, the brothers saying that the right wing is out to get the brother. What do you want to talk about? Anything in particular? Why I love San Francisco so much? You know what's in flavor in my mind tonight? What if you said to me, what would you do the first you went back to San Francisco? I'd go to Chinatown. There's a certain feeling for it. It's the largest Chinatown in America, number one, San, you know, United States. But walking around there, like, anonymously is something, you know, that's very unique. But you got to hit it at the right time, and a certain mood has to hit you. I like it in the rain, incidentally. I love Chinatown in the rain. I love it when it's kind of vacant. They don't like it. I mean, it's a tourist place. But I love seeing the small family businesses. The beautiful thing about the Chinese people is that they're probably the best capitalists on the planet, and they always have been. You don't know that, even though it's a communist Chinese nation with a hybrid of capitalism that's exceeded ours thanks to help from the communists in America. The Chinese were capitalists before America was colonized by the Europeans. We're talking about several thousand years ago, there were small businesses. My friends. I hate that phrase. It's like Benjamin Franklin from high school. Friends, Romans, and countrymen. Caesar, Julius Caesar. Remember that? I didn't read that. I can't call you my friends. You don't know me. I'm not your friend. All right. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joining us now with an exclusive look into race and the Tea Party is Jack Hunter, Race and the Tea Party.
Hello, Michael. It's a pleasure to be with you today. Well, something that's been brewing out there, literally, people talking about the Tea Parties, and they're talking a lot about them. A certain kind of person's talking about the Tea Parties, and I'm talking about liberals. What do they see when they see grassroots conservatives who are upset about spending, Obamacare, and everything else? Well, too many of them are seeing racism. You know, liberals are always good for that. They can find racism pretty much anywhere. And I've written a piece. You're the first one to have it, Michael. I'm very excited about it. But I'm just taking the left to task about their perception of the white middle class as it relates to the Tea Partiers. I think these accusations of racism say more about perception of everyday working Americans than it does those Americans themselves, namely the Tea Partiers. And I look at a guy like Washington Post columnist Colbert King, who says that today's Tea Party adherents are George Wallace legacies. Now, what Colbert King is basically saying, this liberal writer for the Washington Post, is that when he looks out into a Tea Party audience, he looks out in the crowd, he sees these angry white faces, that we're going back to the days of segregation or maybe slavery, who knows how far they want to go, but at least the 50s and 60s, that's what it's all about. That average Americans couldn't be upset about massive government spending, a $14 trillion debt ceiling. It must be because the president is black. It has to be about race. Frank Rich of the New York Times has basically said the same thing, that it's all about race. Maureen Dowd, Paul Krugman, all these liberal columnists, all they can see is race. And I keep making the point time and again, and it must be driven home. The two groups that care about race in this country the most are genuine racists and liberals, especially white liberals. What do I mean by that? Well, genuine racists see everything through the lens of race. They're biological determinists. They are genuine racists, whether they believe in supremacy, this, that, and the other. Liberals can't imagine middle-class whites, Tea Partiers, being upset about anything other than race. It's all about race for both groups. Are people mad about spending? Oh, they don't want to hear about that. It must be about a black president. And I ask the question, are Tea Partiers racist?
How do these Tea Parties differ from the so-called grassroots movements that the left blindly supports? Isn't this a grassroots movement?
This is a genuine grassroots movement. Now, in the past, grassroots movements on the left, genuine populism, if you will, I don't care if it's something like the Black Panthers and the Black Power movement in the 60s or the anti-war protesters in the 60s, there was all sorts of aspects to those populist movements that were beyond the pale as far as civil society is concerned. But yet, the left encouraged those populist movements, warts and all. They always did. You never heard people saying, well, you know, the Black Panthers are completely awful. I'm talking about liberals now, because they generally supported what they stood for, or the anti-war protesters. They do not give Tea Partiers the benefit of the doubt. Are there some Tea Partiers out there with some crazy or wacky sign that's beyond the pale? I'm sure there are. Are there perhaps some Tea Partiers who might have used racist language on occasion? Perhaps. It's very emotion-driven, this, that, and the other. But the idea that this small minority somehow gives, you know, everybody an idea of what the Tea Party stands for, that they must be racist because a few people act up, is completely absurd, and is not a standard that the left would ever apply to their own populist movements. I use the example of the Black Panthers and, of course, you know, the anti-war protesters in the 60s, which they just thought was wonderful, and there were good things about that. But with the Tea Partiers, no benefit of the doubt is given. These are white middle class people. We have a black president. Therefore, it's all about race. I think that's a rather absurd position to take, personally. Well, I would also add that, you know, let's look back in not the not too distant past at other, and this calling these populist movements or grassroots movements is a little bit of a misnomer. But let's look at something like the L.A. riots with Rodney King in the 1990s.
What do you mean?
Now, we heard from many liberals that despite the millions of dollars of damage to private property that was done at the time, despite the fact that innocent people were attacked, if you remember, Reginald Denny was pulled out of the truck there during the L.A. riots and beaten into a pulp, despite all the violence and damage to private property, what we heard from liberals was that L.A. was a powder keg, that this was going to happen at some time, and it reflected urban problems that all of America should pay attention to. I'm sure you remember that. A lot of liberals said, we need to pay attention. Let's fast forward a couple years to 1995, the Million Man March. Now, here was something organized by Louis Farrakhan, an obvious and explicit anti-Semite who says all sorts of awful things about Jews, who's up there joined by Jesse Jackson and other civil rights leaders. And liberals said, well, you know, Louis Farrakhan's not a perfect guy, but there's something valuable to take from the Million Man March. These are black men coming together, and they're talking about the plight of the black family in the United States, which is certainly something that needs to be addressed. Now, take the L.A. riots or the Million Man March. Despite all the problems there, anti-Semitism, violence, damage to private property, despite all that, liberals still find something worthwhile there. That consciousness has been raised, that America needs to look at the problems beneath, you know, with the urban ghetto in L.A. or what's going on with the black family in America and the Million Man March. Now, contrast that with the Tea Parties. You don't have the same kind of problems with this populist movement, with the Tea Partiers, that you had with something like the L.A. riots or Million Man March, and yet the left immediately dismisses all of them as a bunch of racists.
Well, you talk about a classic double standard.
It's completely ridiculous, and shame on them. It says more about the left and their perception of the white middle class than it does about the Tea Partiers themselves when liberals call them racist. It means that they're completely disconnected from the common man in this country, flyover country, as our elitists like to call it when they're flying from L.A. to New York. The Tea Partiers out there, the folks who shop at Walmart, they never come into contact with them, and they just assume, well, they must be racist. Imagine some old white man watching television every night and flashing across his TV screen are lots of black criminals, and he decides, he concludes, well, that's just how black people act. What would liberals respond to that old white man? How would they respond? They would say, sir, you are a racist. You're taking a skewed piece of information and you're reaching conclusions that aren't necessarily so. And yet liberals, whether Maureen Dowd, Paul Krugman, Frank Rich, this gentleman, Colbert King of the Washington Post, all take that exact same view of the Tea Partiers. They see one person acting up or a few signs and they say, look, this is a big white racist movement and is reflective of how racist America is. It's completely absurd.
Where are the positive reports about the Tea Parties?
Well, there are people who are treating the Tea Partiers in a positive respect. Obviously, talk radio and your show, Michael Savage, you know, true conservatives out there are looking at these people and saying, look, they've had enough. Government is getting too big. We're spending too much money, and they have a legitimate beef. Sometimes you'll see on, you know, different outlets, people treat them with respect. But, you know, there is this big, bad liberal media out there, and by and large, they think that the Tea Partiers must be racist. They like to look at, whether it's Chris Matthews or Rachel Maddow or Keith Olbermann or the Washington Post or the New York Times, let's take the phrase, I want my country back. You'll go to Tea Parties and these, you know, grassroots conservatives will have signs that say, I want my country back. Now, in that pea-brained little liberal mind of theirs, That must mean that white people want their country back from a black president. That's absurd. You know, I'm a white southern guy. I don't know anybody that thinks like that, or if I do, they keep it to themselves. It's certainly not explicit, and they're certainly not running around holding up signs. I want my country back means I want my money back. Quit taking my money. I want the deficit reduced. I want to choose my own health care. I don't like cap and trade. I don't like being taxed and spent to death. That's what I want my country back means. You know, it's funny that liberals in the past, anytime there is a grassroots populist movement, take like forced busing in the 70s. Of course, that was a big deal in Boston. Affirmative action, of course, conservatives have always opposed that, and of legal immigration. You know, the amnesty. We shut down the congressional switchboard there a few years back when a lot of our politicians wanted to push through this amnesty nonsense. George W. Bush, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, all those guys. Well, at least for argument's sake, let's say they could at least concoct in their little pea-brain liberal minds of theirs that that was somehow racist, busing, affirmative action, legal immigration. There was some sort of racial component. How in the hell is opposing Obamacare, which is a major focus right now, racist? How did they link that? How did they connect the dots there? The answer to that is they connect the dots any way they like. There doesn't have to be race in it for them to find racism in it, which is pretty much how they operate every time.
Thanks for the report, Jack.
It's always great to speak to you, Michael, and you can read this and more at SouthernAvenger.com.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joining us now with a report on Obama's nuclear treaty plan and how it may affect how we deal with Iran, Russia, and the rest of the world is Eric Stackelback.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here. Well, it took President Obama exactly 1 year and 150 meetings with his cabinet members to finally come up with a nuclear policy, a new policy on when and where and how the U.S. would use nuclear weapons. And I have to tell you, Michael, predictably, it's a disaster. Basically, the Obama administration's nuclear policy is the culmination of about 60 years, as Rudy Giuliani pointed out, about 60 years of left-wing fantasies. It's really unbelievable that an American president would take this posture, but I guess judging by what we've seen from the Obama administration so far in the foreign policy realm, we shouldn't be too surprised.
Exactly.
Now, you remember, Michael, last year in Prague, Obama made this pie-in-the-sky, head-in-the-clouds speech talking about a world without nuclear weapons. And he said the U.S. would take the lead in that initiative in forging a nuclear-free world. Hey, all of us want a world without nuclear weapons. That's all of our dreams, but it's just not reality. But President Obama this week, Michael, took a big step towards making that a reality, at least for the U.S. Basically, this new policy will see the U.S. only use nuclear weapons, and no one wants to use nuclear weapons, obviously, but in some cases, see Hiroshima, Nagasaki, it is necessary. But he wants to severely, severely curtail the use of nuclear weapons to the most extreme cases.
What do you mean?
Now, President Obama is basically saying that if the U.S. is hit by a biological or a chemical or even a cyber attack, a really crippling attack, Michael, that could really just devastate a U.S. city, he's now saying that the U.S. will not react, will not respond with nuclear weapons, but will respond with only conventional weapons. Now, he says he's leaving the possibility open to retaliate against Iran, North Korea, countries like that, by nuclear means. But basically, at the end of the day, it's a very, very weak posture. He says he's not going to develop any new nuclear weapons, which is a big mistake, especially in this new war, this war against radical Islam. We need a lot of times smaller, more tactical nuclear weapons to bust through these bunkers, bust through places like Tora Bora, cave complexes. That requires some forward thinking in our nuclear arsenal. Now that's off the table. So biological, chemical attacks, no nuclear response, no new nuclear weapons development.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
I'll tell you, Michael, President Obama says with this initiative, he's kind of setting the standard for the world. He thinks if the U.S. takes the bull by the horns and becomes the first to disarm, to unilaterally disarm, then the rest of the world will follow suit. Unfortunately, this flies in the face of reality. You have a Russian regime right now that President Obama seems hell-bent on impressing and romancing, who the U.S. is working in tandem with now to reduce its nuclear arsenal. But the Russian regime says, and it is a regime, under Vladimir Putin, it is a regime. Medvedev is basically a puppet. Putin is still pulling the strings in Russia. He's brutal, and that is a regime. The Russians say, hey, if we don't like this nuclear deal with the U.S., the START treaty, we can pull out. Now, as the U.S. is scaling back its nuclear arsenal, its possibility of a nuclear reactive strike, Russia is cutting huge weapons deals around the globe with rogue regimes. Vladimir Putin was in Venezuela last week, Michael. You saw the footage on the news, meeting with Hugo Chavez. The Russians are prepared to sell $5 billion in new arms to Venezuela. They're forging a new military alliance. Now, this is in our hemisphere. Hugo Chavez is in our hemisphere. The Russians are making inroads into our hemisphere, into our space. The Russians are also cutting weapons deals with the Saudis, with Syria, with Algeria, with Libya. And, of course, they're building the nuclear reactor in Iran. Yet while Russia is doing all of this and cutting weapons deals with China, by the way, major weapons deals with the Chinese, while they are doing all of this, the Obama administration is sending exactly the wrong message by actually scaling back our defensive capabilities.
Well, none of this is a surprise from him.
It's not the first time, Michael, in the past few months that this administration has ceded ground to Russia. If you remember back in the fall, the U.S. under Obama decided to scrap the missile defense shield in Eastern Europe. Now, this sent a message of weakness to Putin. This is a guy who you can't project weakness to, Michael. This is a KGB guy through and through, is Vladimir Putin. Right now, he smells weakness. Not only does he and our enemies around the globe smell weakness, but our allies smell weakness. Under this new nuclear posture that Obama has announced this week, it also appears that the U.S. will do away with its tactical nuclear weapons arsenal in Europe. Now, we already sold the Eastern Europeans down the river back in the fall by doing away with the missile defense shield. Now we're going to sell Western Europe down the river. And I'll tell you, Russia is, under Putin, I think, has expansionist global ambitions. And Europe, obviously, is right at Russia's doorstep. If you don't have that nuclear deterrent to hold back Russia, you have a big problem there. So you have Iran and North Korea, which are nuclearizing. North Korea right now possesses nuclear weapons. The CIA said just last week that Iran right now, if it wants to, has the capability to produce nuclear weapons.
Oh, my God.
You have all of this going on, Michael. Then in our corner, the leader of the free world, the most powerful country in the world that sets the standard, you have President Obama with his head in the clouds talking about a nuclear-free world. He's talking about this at probably the most active period for nuclear proliferation in history, where multiple regimes are looking to acquire or have acquired nuclear weapons, rogue regimes, mind you. You have President Obama apparently oblivious to reality and really unilaterally weakening the United States. If I didn't know better, Michael, I would think that he is intentionally endangering the United States. That's how dangerous this new nuclear posture is, and that's how dangerous his series of foreign policy moves over the past year have been. Right now, Iran smells weakness. And I think, Michael, that President Obama, and especially judging by his really third world treatment of Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House last month, I think President Obama has come to grips with the possibility of a nuclear Iran. I think he's willing to accept a nuclear Iran. When he talks about sanctions, quote, with bite, what does that mean? It's nonsense. He needs to talk about crippling sanctions. But at this point, Michael, it doesn't matter. Nothing, and I I mean nothing, will stop Iran from its drive for nuclear weapons short of military action. I firmly believe that. Sanctions will not work. You are dealing with a genocidal, suicidal Iranian regime that has no problems, and they've said this, Michael, they have no problem sacrificing millions of Iranian civilians for the greater goal of wiping Israel off the map. They will fire a nuke at Tel Aviv, taking out 80% of Israel's population at Tel Aviv metro area. They will do that, and they will sacrifice, say, 20 million Iranians in an Israeli response. Remember, this is a country of 70 million people, very young country. Iran is willing to take that trade-off for the greater good, in their eyes, of wiping the Zionist entity off the map. And this is a regime, Michael, that during the 1980s showed us quite clearly the value they had on human life.
What do you mean?
During the Iran-Iraq War, the Ayatollah Khomeini sent waves of 12-year-old kids to clear minefields, promising them heaven. They actually wore keys around their necks, Michael. These young, thousands of young Iranian boys wore keys around their necks. The Ayatollah told them, these are the keys to heaven. You will die as martyrs and be with Allah.
Unbelievable.
So this is the mentality you have from that regime. This is not the days of mutually assured destruction where the Soviets didn't want to die, the U.S., we didn't want to die. Iran is fighting, in their eyes, for a greater good, for Allah. It's a very dangerous game. Sanctions will not work. What Obama is moving towards is an acceptance of a nuclear Iran. He's trying to handicap Israel, hold Israel back. And I'll tell you, when Israel strikes, I don't think it's a question of if anymore, Michael. I think it's a question of when Israel is forced to strike those Iranian nuclear facilities because it has no other choice. I'll be really interested to see Obama's reaction. I think he's going to condemn Israel in the harshest terms publicly. Lord knows, in terms of sanctions, the UN, cutting military aid, I think this is an inherently anti-Israel president. Everything I've seen so far from his behavior towards Israel has led me to believe that, Michael. His outreach to the Muslim world. And Michael, everything I saw before this man was elected showed me he would not be a friend of Israel, from his relationship with Reverend Ray to various Palestinian anti-Semites. It was obvious this guy was no fan of Israel. Now, as he is as president, it's shocking and dismaying treatment of perhaps our closest ally, long-term strategic ally, friendly nation, who faces the same enemy as us. What you're going to see is Obama moving towards a posture that we can contain a nuclear Iran. We will provide, and Hillary Clinton said this last year, Michael, if you remember, we can provide a nuclear umbrella for Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, Israel, the Gulf states. That's going to be the caveat that Obama gives.
This is unbelievable to me.
When Iran announces one day that it is nuclear, that it's officially, it possesses the bomb, and I'll tell you, if Israel doesn't act, that day is going to rapidly approach, Michael, where we all wake up one day and we wake up to a nuclear weaponized Iran. This Iranian regime, they're not pragmatic. They're not rational. They are true believers in their mission. They cannot be contained. They're an expansionist, radical Shia state. What they say, when they talk about wiping Israel off the map, they mean it. When they call the U.S. the great Satan, they mean it. And if they get their hands on nuclear weapons, they will use them. There's not a doubt in my mind. It might be 8 months, 12 months, 2 years. They will use them. They have to. It's part of their ideology. Their whole being, the whole existence of this Islamic regime is based on wiping out Israel, wiping out the West, wiping out every infidel regime that holds Iran back from reestablishing a new Persian Empire.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, thanks again for having me on. Always a pleasure.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Obama is demilitarizing America. Yesterday, it was announced that we would no longer even consider attacking most countries without nuclear weapons. Here's Hillary Clinton talking about it.
The nuclear posture review we are releasing today represents a milestone in the transformation of our nuclear forces and the way in which we approach nuclear issues. We are recalibrating our priorities to prevent nuclear proliferation and nuclear terrorism. And we are reducing the role and number of weapons in our arsenal while maintaining a safe, secure, and effective deterrent to protect our nation, allies, and partners.
Wonderful. Just like Chamberlain, Obama is giving up more and more of our weapons while giving more and more freedom to the enemy. And how are the Republicans responding? By kissing up to Nancy Pelosi. Here's Senator Tom Coburn talking about the wonders of Nancy Pelosi.
She's a nice lady. Come on now. She is a nice. How many of you all have met her? She's a nice person. She's a nice person. Just because somebody disagrees with you doesn't mean they're not a good person.
And here he is attacking Fox News.
If they can put us in prison, are they not trampling on our Fifth Amendment rights by putting it under the IRS? Because the IRS thinks you're guilty until proven innocent.
I want everybody else to get to answer a question, ask a question. So let me. The intention is not to put anybody in jail. That makes for good TV news on Fox, but that isn't the intention.
Now there's the loyal opposition for you. I wonder if they oppose Obama's cynical exploitation of Christians at a recent prayer breakfast.
On this day, let us commit our spirit to the pursuit of a life that is true, to act justly and to love mercy and walk humbly with the Lord. And when we falter, as we will, let redemption through commitment and through perseverance and through faith be our abiding hope and fervent prayer.
Right. That is for those of you who are Christians. At least he was pitching to a religious audience. Not so in this next clip.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand and welcome the 44th President of the United States, Barack Obama, who will be calling out the ceremonial first speech. This, ladies and gentlemen, is
we also learned today on the Savage Nation who was behind the raid on the so-called Christian militia last week. It's none other than the extremists at the Southern Poverty Law Center, in my opinion, who are about the most dangerous left-wing extremists in America. The Southern Poverty Law Center has now trumped the ACLU as a threat to America's security, in my opinion. And none other than Mark Potok is going around the media saying that bricks are being thrown through windows, gas lines are being cut, there are death threats, there are coffins being dragged onto the lawns of congressmen, and it's all against Democrats. Does he know about the Republican congressman in Virginia and his name, the man who was actually threatened? I don't think so. And Potok is doing the reverse now. He's saying that the people on the right have come up with the theory that this has all been put up somehow, all created by the liberals to attack conservatives. I agree with that. And so what does Potok of the dangerous, extremist, radical leftist Southern Poverty Law Center say? Well, he says that any Tea Party member, anyone who's angry at Obamacare, anyone who's angry at Obama, has done damage to our democracy and the democratic process.
Jesus.
Yes, it's unbelievable what's going on in this country, Beowulf. It's unbelievable to me.
Yeah. In other words, anybody who participates in the democratic process is damaging it somehow.
Right. And how about Hillary Clinton announcing the nuclear posture review? And where they're saying that she's recalibrating our priorities. We're going to reduce our number of nukes, and we're going to make sure that we never use them. You hear this? How is this happening, Beowulf, without Congress voting on this? When did we become a one-man dictatorship?
That's a very good question. You know, he makes this, he does this when Congress is out of session. The Senate has to vote on it eventually, but it could be months before they do that. After all, he just made a bunch of recess appointments, and the Senate isn't going to be able to vote on that until next year. This treaty could be the same way.
So you're saying there will be a vote on the nuclear disarmament treaty that he's going to sign with Russia?
Well, at some point, but he's made the decision unilaterally right now.
How can he go ahead with a decision? How can he make a decision and go ahead with it without the approval of the Congress?
That's a very good question. He's on very shaky grounds constitutionally.
Well, Barack Hussein Obama is going to try to create a nuclear-free world because he grew up eating those bumper stickers, you know, in Hawaii. He grew up eating the nuclear-free world propaganda.
Like you can't.
And I cannot understand how the military has permitted this to go on.
I guess he walked past one too many a Volkswagen Bug with you can't hug your kids with nuclear arms on at the back of it.
On April 8th, the president will sign an arms control treaty with Russia that will set limits on numbers of warheads and launchers lower than any previously agreed. Now, how in the world can he sign this without Congress approving? That you know that they need two-thirds of majority to ratify the treaty. Now, there is an opponent to it, Senator John Kyle, Republican of Arizona. He's already demanding to know whether the new START treaty represents a new era in arms control or unilateral disarmament. Now, Obama's dream of a nuclear-free world is beyond comprehension. How in the world can the American people let him get away with this? And when will we use nuclear weapons? When we can no longer use them? When we're not able to use them? I mean, the fact of the matter is, Beowulf, let's be realists about this. The world is mocking Obama's weakness and naivete. The Russians have said that they can opt out of Obama's new nuclear disarmament treaty anytime they want to. The Hitler of Iran, that's Ahmadinejad, told Obama he was an amateur and to get some experience, right?
Savage.